Okay, so I'm going to try to keep this going so we don't take too much of our coffee break away. I'm going to be quick. What I decided to do in this 10 minutes, instead of talking about a specific model, we heard a very nice example of a specific model from KT earlier. What I decided to do is try to tell you a little bit about general developments in model building, particularly since the measurement of theta 1-3, what it might mean, and talk about some broader issues that hopefully we can bring up some of them in the discussion later. All right, so before I talk to you about what I'm going to talk about in the next 10 minutes, I'm going to first start with what I'm not going to talk about, which is the issue about all these possibilities of sterile neutrinos. As you know, there are a number of anomalies at the level of few sigma, right? There's LSND, there's the mini boom, low energy excess, there are various new interesting anomalies associated with the gallium, there's some deficit, there's reactor neutrino flux, where basically people recalculate the fluxes and so, even better, doesn't that look nice? Okay, so it's not going away, yeah. I think, there you go, yeah, up. Up is good, okay. So basically, all of these anomalies, it's well understood that perhaps one can have EV sterile neutrinos in the story. But it's a very, very, very complicated story. And in fact, the real experts here are people like Joachim Kopp and various collaborators, and they've written very nice papers on this showing that if you try to add this in, it's not just because we're lazy and we don't want to add it in and we want to let go of three families. Is that if you try to add it in, it's actually a total nightmare. And the reason why is the disappearance data and the appearance data are at major conflict with each other, so it's not so easily done. So when I say we're going to restrict here to three families, it's for reasons beyond just the fact that when we do flavor, we don't want to go past 3x3 matrices, okay? But it is an issue, and so these are some things to kind of think about. So people are often focusing on three-family neutrino models only. We now call it the new standard model. And of course, still there are many, many questions about how you generate neutrino masses. There are the big questions, and I could spend at least 10 minutes or maybe hours talking about all of these. I'm going to focus on the ones that I put in color. So of course, we have neutrino mass suppressions, whether they're Meyer or Dirac. What's the mass hierarchy? The CP violation. What are the implications for broad beyond standard model paradigms, right, that we're used to thinking about? What does the data tell us about those? What are connections to the new physics? What are issues of testability of these kinds of scenarios? Okay. And as I said, I'm going to focus on the things that I particularly find interesting. And one of the take-home messages from my talk today is that I think the lepton mixing angle pattern makes this problem more interesting than you might think the flavor puzzle would normally be. Okay, if you think about the quarks. That's one of the major messages. In particular, if you try to combine it with some sort of broad brush sense of grand unification. So not grand unification, the more ambitious thing that KT talked to us, where you have SE5 and the full set of constraints, but rather the idea that quarks and leptons have their flavor structure coming from similar sort of sources or origins. Just a broad sense, okay? And I think from those two things, we can learn some interesting stuff. So the flavor puzzle, the standard model, so the origin of the fermion masses and mixing angles is notoriously difficult. Think about the quarks, it's lots of tiny numbers. It just looks like a nightmare. It's likely to be very, very high scale physics. It's not obvious how to test these things. So you might say, well, why on earth? Now we have the neutrinos, it's even worse, even more small numbers, right? And the answer is it's still very, but I think it's more interesting. And the reason is that we have at least two large mixing angles. We know this, right? And these two large mixing angles, already in a three-family scenario, I've told you that if you're a model builder, it's more challenging to write down models of neutrino mass, those matrices, that are actually sort of easily done. Let me compare. So let's work in, this is all hand-wavy, but this just gives you the general idea. So let's work in the basis, as we always do, where the charge leptons are diagonal. So we look at the neutrino mass matrix. And then you say, suppose all the mixing angles are small. Well, that's super easy. Just go for a thing that's almost diagonal. Put in your symmetry, make it so. What if you have one large and two small? Well, that's also pretty easy. We know if we have some kind of situation where you can have, you know, think about degenerate perturbation theory. So I've been teaching quantum mechanics at Sakurai level for years now, so that's all I can think about. You know, we know that if we have degenerate things, you can kick out a 45-degree mixing angle easily. So the 45 degrees is easy, right? But two small and can come along in the three-family model. Three large, you can have anarchy, okay? And I would say that's relatively simple as well. You just have no structure whatsoever. But two large and one small, which is the pattern at which, personally, I believe is what we see, right? What it finds is that either you're in sort of two kinds of limits, right? So either everything wants to be big, and you've got to do something powerful to force a small angle to force that essentially zero and then build it back up with a correction is a typical thing people do. Okay, and that means, as people have introduced, as you've seen, powerful non-abelian discrete family symmetries that are so powerful that at tree level they give you no possibility of writing down a mass term at all. And everything comes from a higher dimensional operator and you break it down to some space.
Yep.
So basically, these patterns are kind of harder. I'm going to lump anarchy into harder because now we're in some corner where the theta 1-3 is large-ish compared to what it could have been, right? But it's also not a particularly large angle, so you've got to force yourself into some corner of that parameter space. And so harder is more interesting when you're a model builder. If it's something where you can write down 100 models in a day if you're Chaco or somebody, I mean, basically, essentially, you know, that's not good. We want something where it's harder, we've got to work hard, maybe we can learn something from it. Okay? All right. So the question we can then say is anarchy versus structure. And there are some cases for anarchy that are nice. And the point is that this thing is largest, it was up close to the old show upper bound. So this is certainly a viable thing. I must point out that my colleague Yang Bai and collaborators have some nice recent explicit realizations of these ideas. But that's not what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about what I work on, which is structure, so we're thinking this angle is small. So in this paradigm that I was talking about before. And as we've seen, the paradigm is this discrete non-abelian family symmetry. You break it down to some coset space by some Flavon fields. It's rather complicated, you know, but the main issue and challenge that I would like to point out here is that even within this paradigm, we have this issue of where do we start? And that's also something very new because we have large mixing angles. What do I mean? For the quarks, we know that the CKM matrix is basically the identity up to small corrections. If you think a la Wolfenstein, you parameterize them in terms of Kibibo angle, and you say, you're building models of flavor, one logical starting point is to say you can start with Kibibo angle or some power of it is some flavor expansion parameter. So if you take that expansion parameter and some theoretical limit to zero, you go back to identity, and that's a unique starting point. But for the leptons, it is not so. Some perturbation, some lambda prime, but if we then take that perturbation to zero, we know we have large angles. And it's very unlikely that these large angles are built up by some conspiracy of tiny, tiny effects all adding together, right? So what we have is some situation where we have bare mixing angles and some perturbations. And the question is, what are those things? And of course, depends on how large these things are. So let's take a broad brush unification paradigm and say, let's imagine that this is Kibibo. Okay, why not? In fact, people have been doing this for a long time. And in fact, very nice paper of Li et al. Back in 2004, Minicata Smart, many, many others, these ideas went by the form of quark-lectum complementarity. Ramon and I and some collaborators, we called it Kibibo haze. And the idea is that these are the effects, and that in some broad brush unification sense, Kibibo size effects can enter the lepton sector. And in fact, long before theta 1-3 was measured, it was conjectured that the size of this thing was just a related to Kibibo angle. In fact, Pierre Ramon was one of the people proponing this, and he has a very simple framework, simple sort of toy model where you can get this kind of a structure. This sometimes goes by the name of charge lepton corrections, because as you know, this MNSP is some product of the charge lepton, the neutrino, and so this could be the charge lepton piece. And this W is some matrix with two large angles. Now what you see is that the third angle gets filled in by this, where this is the bare atmospheric. Bare atmospheric could easily be 45 degrees. And then what you find is something that, if you just put in the numerics, this gives you an angle around 9 degrees, which is around where the data is. It's interesting, right? And you might say, well, there are other relations we saw in the first talk. There are other relations involving Kibibo angle and other things. So it's not a unique thing. It's just the point is this effect can come in and be of this type of size. And the reason, however, it's non-trivial to implement in some detailed theory. And the reason why is now you have order Kibibo corrections flying around. You better make sure that when you build your model that you're having something that these corrections don't affect the other two mixing angles in a way that takes you out of the data. Right. So that's the basic point. So let me now, okay, I think I have like two more. We do a broad taxonomy of models. So this is pre-theta 1-3 discovery in March 2012. So most models, what people do, you have some, again, it's in this language of thinking about bare plus corrections. So the bare, you have bare atmospheric of 45, bare reactor of zero. And then the whole deal was about what you choose for your bare solar angle, and almost everybody chose the case where you have this relation for it. It gives you tri-bimaximal mixing, as we call it, the beautiful matrix with the incredibly ugly name. But it's a truly beautiful thing. In fact, if you look at this mixing matrix, what you see is it's then it gets back to Sakurai quantum mechanics again. you basically have Clebsch-Gordan coefficients. It's what if you take two spin ones and you combine and you project out the total JZ, the JZ equals to zero component. It's those things. And it's one of those things you stare at and you think, this got to mean something. But who knows, right? But anyway, lots and lots of models of this type. And then there are a few of us, others who are sort of rogues, so we talk about other ideas. So one idea is, the idea is that maybe the golden ratio comes into it. You can come up with all kinds of models like this. Why not? The point is, it's a bare mixing angle and you can have a correction. And you see, both of these are cases where if you really look at this and you think about corrections in terms of powers of Khabibbo, then what you have is Khabibbo squared corrections about a few degrees, right? And so all of these are sort of within the range of the data, you know, to Khabibbo squared. And so you don't want large corrections screwing you up. But you can also have things like bimaximal where you do need that correction. You want the theta 1, 2 to be pushed back, right? Because 45 is obviously way too big. So what about afterwards? So afterwards, what we've seen is now theta 1, 3 is really a Khabibbo effect. It's order lambda Khabibbo, right? Roughly speaking, modulo some factors. So the models where you had before, where you keep this sort of structure and you now have within Khabibbo squared theta 1, 2, then what you need is to control the corrections to make sure all the other angles aren't shifted out. And in fact, many of the original scenarios are no good. So you have to go back and revisit them. But this is doable, okay? So you go back and you say your other previous mixing scenarios are just some leading order thing, and you try to then fill in this zero, which is nothing protecting it, by the way, right? And so you fill it in, and there's some very nice papers, including one from Lin back in 2009, who anticipated this issue within these tribimaximal mixing models in the A4 case in particular, and proposed a nice solution where he basically can engineer a hierarchy between the flavons associated with charged leptons and those associated with neutrinos. And you can make your potential stable under that in a very straightforward way. Now, I can also say, suppose you want to then, maybe the data is telling you to start looking at models of like bimaximal again. Why not? We know those are going to have large corrections. And so the point is, if you have those large corrections flying around, it might mean it's time to think about these again. The other thing you can do is stop this again. There's two ways you can do that, obviously. You can drop this one and say, maybe there's some numerical with theta 1,3. Maybe there's some weird symmetry group that's saying theta 1,3 is 9 is some fundamental thing in such the way, same way that the theta 1,2 being 35 point whatever gave you the tribimaximal stuff from the A4. Okay, it seems unlikely, but who knows? People have barely scratched the surface of this. And I probably shouldn't have written the 12. Claudia Hagenorm was telling me about some of these ideas she was having, but I'm not sure they've published that one. She's published many other things that are more in this sort of category. And KT's talk was also falling in this sort of category as well, right? They found a way to fill in the zero in a way that didn't mess up everything else in a very nice, specific way with a prediction, right? Also say we could drop maximal theta 2,3. There's some hints in the data that it's non-maximal, although it's close, and people can explore that. The point is there's many points of exploration, and we've now learned quite a bit. So this is my last slide. Some final thoughts. The first thing is these are exciting times. We have some data and we have lots of interesting ideas. There's also lots of room for more interesting ideas. Right? Time to think about these kinds of things. Let me also comment that for almost everything, I didn't talk about how we're generating the neutrino mass scale, but most cases people are using a typical type 1 seesaw, so very high energy physics. Right? So then the question is, how are we going to see these things? Even beyond that, you also remember what we're doing is trying to understand the masses of these particles and the mixing angles, the left-handed mixing. And so basically there, the issue is that we know the freedom that we have in model building is coming in with finding the right-handed sector. And how can you make right-handed sector stuff observable? You need new physics to bring it in. We know in the standard model you're not going to see those right-handed mixings, right? They're just not physical, they're not observable. So you need new physics, but new physics can also come with its own flavor puzzle. So the issue is how to disentangle these things. And let me comment that this is clearly, even though neutrino physics always gets lumped in the intensity frontier set in that diagram, this is clearly these kinds of things are going to require some energy frontier things in order to get any sense of whether any of these ideas are working. Now my last comment, and this is one where I'm hoping that we can discuss it later, is that obviously, the next thing that can be of interest for people is the role of the CP phases, right? This is the experimental program. We want to measure these things. And one thing that sort of disturbed me is that when you hear people talk about the CP phases in the lepton sector, they're always saying, ah, we want to measure delta CP because it's going to tell us about the baryon symmetry of the universe. And the point is that that's not true. You can build models in which there's a direct connection between the CP phase and the left-handed mixings in the MNSP, and the right-handed sector, which is where the leptogenesis phases come in. But for every model you can build like that, you can build 10 where they're not. And yet, it's in the press releases, it's in everything. And one thing that I think maybe as theorists we should try to be doing is to, I understand, you don't want some wishy-washy statement. The reporter's right there. Well, what can you do with it? You don't want to say, well, maybe we can, if there's this and that. We don't want that, I know. But shouldn't we be able to find some better soundbite or motivation for this entire experimental program that we're banking our future on? All right, thank you.
I'll just say that Lisa picked a very good way to, for me not to cut her off at the end of her talk. Now, are there any questions?
Yes, sir.
You did mention some connection between CP phases and TBM in your previous slide.
Oh, yeah.
Or how TBM is modified by that. Can you just say just a few more words
about
that?
Yeah, in fact, that's a good point. I had meant to say it in several places even before. So let me go back to the sort of toy relation back here, where you say that you can start from, remember we said, having a bare mixing matrix with a zero for theta 1,3, and then you shift it. The point is, if you have CP phases in here, you could add some cosine delta or something in there as well. And so the reason why I said these things are constrained is that depending on how these things come in, so for example, in this relation, right, you fill in the zero that would be here for this W having two large angles, but you also shift the 1,2 angle. And suppose you start with a tri-maximal mixing hypothesis, you don't want an order lambda cabibo correction to theta 1,2 there because it'll throw you right out of the right range. But if you have a, you can have a cosine delta and a sine delta kind of business, then one way people are thinking about trying to do that is to use phases to somehow try to tune some of them down in some parts and dial them back up in other parts. And I think when you really have the phases in there in an explicit model, for example, I think KT's model, they have phases explicitly in there. Right, and so then if you really look at how the things are generated, then you can see those cosines and sines are going to come in some specific way. Yeah.
Thank you.
It does, but I mean, the point is we know eventually there's going to be phases, right? At the CKM, there's an order one phase. It'd be hard to imagine, you know, if somehow if the MNSP phase is not an order one phase, it's going to be another question of interest. Why not? There's no reason why it can't be. And so the point is those things are going to be flying around. We just haven't been coping with them before because back when we didn't know what theta 1,3 was or whether it was almost zero, it didn't matter anyway because if it was almost immeasurable, those CP effects were going to be gone.
Any more urgent questions? Okay, Lisa, thank you very much. Let's come back at 10 minutes to the hour for Mu Chin Chen's talk.